But it was such a beautiful, peaceful night. The moon new and high, and Newt decided to chance it. Lorena might already be asleep, it was so peaceful. On such a night, it would be little risk to tie a mouse for a few hours. He looped his rein over a tree limb and went walking back toward Lorena's. He stopped at a little stand of live oak about 100 yards from the camp, sat down with his back against a tree, and drew his pistol. Just holding it made him feel ready for anything. Resting with his back against the tree, Newt let himself drift back into the old familiar daydreams in which he got better and better as a cowboy until even the captain had to recognize that he was a top hand. His prowess was not lost on Lorena either. He didn't exactly dream that they got married, but she did ask him to get off his horse and talk for a while. But while they were talking, he began to feel that something was wrong. Lorena's face was there, and then it wasn't. Somehow the daydream had become a nightdream, and the nightdream was ending. He woke up very frightened, though at first he didn't know why he was frightened. He just knew that something was wrong. He still sat under the tree, the gun in his hand, only there was a sound that was wrong, a sound like drumming. For a second it confused him. Then he realized what it was. The cattle were running. Instantly, he was running too, running for Mouse. He wasn't sure how close the cattle were, or whether they were running in his direction, but he didn't stop to listen. He knew he had to get to Mouse, and then ride back to Lorena, to help her in case the cattle swerved her way. He began to hear men yelling to the west, obviously the boys trying to turn the cattle. Then suddenly, a bunch of running cattle appeared right in front of him, 50 or 60 of them. They ran right past him and on toward the bluffs. Newt ran as hard as he could, not because he was afraid of being trampled, but because he had to get the mouse and try to be some help. He kept running until he was covered with sweat and could barely get breath into his lungs. He was hoping none of the cowboys saw him afoot. He held under the gun as he ran. Finally, he had to slow down. His legs refused to keep up the speed, and he trotted the last 200 yards to where he had tied Mouse, but the horse wasn't there. Newt looked around to be sure he had the right place. He had used a boulder as a landmark, and the boulder was where it should be, but not the horse. Newt knew the stampede might have scared him and caused him to break the rein, but there was no broken rein hanging from the tree where Mouse had been tied. Before he could stop himself, Newt began to cry. He had lost the mouse, an unforgivable thing, and all because he thought he had conceived a good plan for watching Lorena. He hated to think what the captain would say when he had to confess. He ran one way and then the other for a while, thinking there might be two identical boulders, that the horse might still be there, but it wasn't. The horse was just gone. He sat down under the tree where Mouse should have been, sure that he was ruined as a cowboy unless a miracle happened, and he didn't think one would. The cattle were still running. He could feel the earth shake and hear the drumming of their hooves, though they weren't close. Probably the boys had managed to get them circling. Newt finally got his breath back and stopped crying, but he didn't get up because there was no reason to. He felt a terrible anger at Mouse for having run off and put him in such a position. If Mouse had suddenly walked up, Newt felt he would cheerfully have shot him. But Mouse didn't walk up. Newt heard a few shots, quite a ways to the north. Just the boys, firing to turn the herd. Then the drumming got fainter and finally stopped. Newt knew the run was over. He sat where he was, wondering why, of all people, he had to be so unlucky. Then he noticed that it was beginning to get light. He must have slept most of the night over by Lorena's camp. He got up and trudged through the faint light back toward the wagon. He had not walked a quarter of a mile before he heard a loping horse and turned to see P clipping along the ridge right toward him. Though caught afoot, Newt still felt a certain relief. P was a friend, and wouldn't judge him as harshly as the others would. Even in the cool morning, P's horse was white with sweat, so it had been run hard.
"Darn, you're alive after all," P said. "I figured you was. Captain's about to have a fit. He decided you got trampled, and he and Gus are having at it because Gus was the one sent you off." Why did he think I got trampled? Newt asked. "'Cause your horse was mixed in with the cattle when we finally got 'em turned,' Pete said. "'They all think you're a dead hero. "'Maybe I'll get to be a hero when I tell 'em I found you.'
Newt climbed upon Pete's weary horse, almost too tired to care that his reputation had been saved.
"'What'd he do? Jump over a bush and throw you?' Pete asked. I was always skittish about them small horses. They can get out from under you too quick.
He'll play hell doing it again, Newt said, feeling very angry at Mouse. He ordinarily wouldn't have spoken so strongly in the presence of Pea or any adult, but his feelings were ragged. Somehow Pea's explanation of what had happened made more sense than the truth, so much so that Newt began to half believe it himself. Being thrown was not particularly admirable, but it happened to all cowboys sooner or later, and it was a lot easier to admit to than what had actually occurred. As they trotted over a ridge, Newt could see the herd about a mile away. It seemed curious that the captain would get upset at the thought that he had been trampled. If he had let himself get thrown, he deserved to be trampled, but he was too sleepy to care what anybody thought.
"'Looky there,' P said. "'I reckon that's the new cook.'
Newt had let his eyelids fall. It was not easy to get them up again, even to see the new cook. He was so sleepy things looked blurred when he did open his eyes. Then he saw a donkey with a pack on its back walking slowly along. "'I didn't know a donkey could cook,' he said irritably. Annoyed that P would josh him when he was so tired.
"'No, the cook's over there,' P said. "'He's got a fair lead on the donkey.'
Sure enough, a short man was walking through the grass some 50 yards ahead of the donkey. He was traveling slow. It was just that his donkey was traveling slower. The man wore a sombrero with a hole in the top.
"'I guess the captain found us another old bandit,' P said. "'He ain't much taller than a rock.'
It was true, the new cook was very short. He was also very stout-looking. He carried a rifle casually over one shoulder, holding it by the barrel. When he heard them riding up, he stopped and whistled at the donkey, but the donkey paid no attention. Newt saw that the new cook was old. His brown face was nothing but wrinkles. When they rode up, he stopped and courteously took off his sombrero, and his short hair was white. But his eyes were friendly.
"Well, howdy," P said. "We're with the Hat Creek outfit. Are you the new cook?"
"I am Poe Campo," the man said.
"If you was to spur up that donkey, you'd get there a lot quicker," P said. "We're all practically starved."
Poe Campo smiled at Newt.
"If I tried to ride that donkey, it would stop, and I would never get there at all," Poe said. "Besides, I don't ride animals."
"Why not?" P asked, amazed.
"It's not civilized," the old man said.
"We're animals, too. How would you like it if someone rode you?" Such a question was too much for P. He didn't consider himself an animal, and in his whole life had never given 1 minute's thought to the possibility of being ridden.
"You mean you just walk everywhere?" Newt asked.
The notion of a man who didn't ride horses was almost too strange to be believed. It was particularly strange that such a man was coming to cook for a crew of cowboys, some of whom hated to dismount even to eat.
Pocampo smiled. "It's a good country to walk in," he said.
"We got to hurry," Pete said, a little alarmed to be having such a conversation.
"Get down and walk with me, young man," Pocampo said. "We might see some interesting things if we keep our eyes open. You can help me gather breakfast."
"You'll likely see the captain if you don't speed along a little faster," Pete said. "Captain don't like to wait on breakfast."
Newt slid off the horse. It was a surprise to P, and even a little bit of a surprise to himself, but he did it anyway. The wagon was only 200 or 300 yards away,
It wouldn't take long to walk it, but it would postpone for a few minutes having to explain why he had lost his horse.
"I'll just walk on with him," he said to P. "By God, if this keeps up, I guess we'll all be afoot before long," P said. "I'll just lope on over and tell the captain neither one of you is dead."
He started to leave and then looked down at Pocampo.
"Do you use a lot of pepper in your cooking?" he asked.
"As much as I can find," Pocampo said.
"Well, that's all right. We're used to it," P said.
To Newt's surprise, Pocampo put a friendly hand on his shoulder. He almost flinched, for it was rare for anyone to touch him in friendship. If he got touched, it was usually in a wrestling match with one of the Rainies.
"I like to walk slow," Pocampo said. "If I walk too fast, I might miss something."
"There ain't much to miss around here," Newt said. "Just grass."
"But grass is interesting," the old man said. "It's like my serape. Only it's the earth it covers. It covers everything, and one day it will cover me."
Though the old man spoke cheerfully, the words made Newt sad. He remembered Sean O'Brien. He wondered if the grass had covered Sean yet. He hoped it had. He had not been able to rid himself of the memory of the muddy grave they had put Sean in, back by the Nueces.
"How many men in this outfit?" Pocampo asked.
Newt tried to count in his head, but his brain was tired, and he knew he was missing a few hands.
"There's a bunch of us," he said. "More than 10.
"Have you got molasses?" Pocampo asked.
"There's a barrel in the wagon, but we ain't used it yet," Newt said. "Might be saving it for Christmas."
"Maybe I'll fry up some grasshoppers tonight," Pocampo said. "Grasshoppers make good eating if you fry them crisp and dip them in a little molasses."
Newt burst out laughing at the thought of anyone eating a grasshopper. Pocampo was evidently a joker.
"What's your donkey's name?" he asked, feeling a little fresher for having had his laugh.
"I call her Maria after my sister," Pocampo said. "My sister was slow, too."
"Do you really cook grasshoppers?" Newt asked. "When I can get them," Pocampo said. "The old ones taste better than the young ones." "It isn't that way with animals, but it is with grasshoppers. The old ones are brittle, like old men. They are easy to get crisp."
"I doubt you'll get anybody to eat one," Newt said, beginning to believe that Pocampo was serious. After all the trouble there had been over snakes in the stew, it was hard to imagine what would happen if Pocampo fried up grasshoppers.
Newt liked the old man and didn't want him to get off on the wrong foot with the crew, which, after all, was a touchy crew.
"Maybe you ought to just cook some beef," he suggested. "That's what we're mostly used to."
Pocampo chuckled again.
"Worms make good butter, you know," he said. "Slugs particularly."
Newt didn't know what to say to that. It occurred to him that the captain might have been a little hasty when he hired the cook. Pocampo was even friendlier than Bowl, but still a man who thought you could dip grasshoppers in molasses and use worms for butter was not likely to become popular with a finicky eater like Jasper Fant, who liked his beef straight. "Mr. Gus used to make the biscuits, but he had to leave his ovens behind," Newt said. He was hungry, and the memory of how good Mr. Gus's biscuits had tasted when they lived in Lonesome Dove came over him so strongly that for a second he felt faint. Pocampo looked at Newt quickly and hitched up his pants.
"I'll make you something better than biscuits," he said, but he didn't mention what it might be.
"I hope it ain't worms," Newt said.
Chapter 48.
"You think that Indian's around here somewhere?" Call asked.
"How would I know?" Augustus said. "He didn't inform me of his business. He just said he'd cut our balls off if we come north of the Canadian."
I'd like to know why these cattle ran, Call said. It was a still night, and we had 'em bedded down.
Cattle don't just run in the rain, Augusta said. They can run on still nights, too.
I don't like it that Dietz lost the man's track, Call said. A man that Dietz can't track is a slippery man.
Hell, Augusta said. Dietz is just rusty. You're rusty, too. The two of you have lost your skills. Running a livery stable don't prepare you for tracking Comancheros.
I suppose you ain't rusty, though, Call said.
My main skills are talking and cooking biscuits, Augusta said, and getting drunk on the porch. I've probably slipped a little on the biscuits in the last few days, and I've lost the porch, but I can still talk with the best of them.
Or the worst, Call said. They were standing by the wagon, hoping the new cook would come in time to cook breakfast. P.I. loped up and unfolded himself in the direction of the ground.
"Your getting off a horse reminds me of an old crane landing in a mud puddle," Augusta said.
P. ignored the remark. It was necessary to ignore most of those Gus made, or else you got bogged down in useless conversation.
"Well, Newt's alive," he said. "He got throwed off, is all."
"Why didn't you bring him?" Call asked, relieved.
"We met the cook, and he wanted company," P said. "The cook claims that he don't ride on animals, so they're walking. There they come now."
Sure enough, they could see the boy and the old man a couple hundred yards away. They were moving in the general direction of the camp, but not rapidly.
"If the cook's as slow as Newt, they won't be here until next week," Gus said.
"What are they doing?" Call asked. They were certainly doing something. Instead of simply coming to camp, they were walking around in circles, as if looking for lost objects.
"The cook's got a donkey, only he don't ride it," P.I. remarked. "He says it ain't civilized to ride animals."
"Why, the man's a philosopher," Augusta said.
"That's right. I hired him just to talk to you," Call said. "It would free the rest of us up so maybe we could work." A few minutes later, Newt and Pocampo walked up to the wagon, trailed at a good distance by the donkey. It turned out that they had been gathering birds' eggs. They were carrying them in the old man's serape, which they had stretched between them like a hammock. "Buenos dias," Pocampo said to the group at large. "If that donkey ever gets here, we'll have breakfast."
"Why can't we have it now?" Augustus asked. "You're here, and I see you brought the eggs."
"Yes, but I need my skillet," Pocampo said. "I'm glad I spotted those plovers. It's not every day I find this many plovers' eggs."
"It's not every day I eat 'em," Augusta said. "What'd you say your name was?"
"Pocampo," the old man said. "I like this boy here. He helped me gather these eggs, although he's bunged up from getting throwed."
"Well, I'm Augustus McCrae," Augusta said. "You'll have to do the best you can with this rough old crew."
Pocampo whistled at his donkey. "Plover's eggs are better than quail eggs," he said. "More taste, although quail's eggs aren't bad if you boil them and let them cool." He went around the camp, shaking hands with each man in turn. By the time he had finished meeting the crew, the donkey had arrived, and in a remarkably short time, Pocampo had unpacked a huge skillet, made himself a little grill with a couple of branding irons laid across two chunks of firewood, and had scrambled up 60 or 70 plover's eggs. He sprinkled in a few spices from his pack and cooked the eggs until they could be cut in slices, like an egg pie. After sampling his own wares and grunting cryptically, he gave each man a slice. Some, like Jasper, were reluctant to sample such exotic fare,
but once they had eaten a bite or two, their reluctance disappeared.
"Darn! This is the best bird-egg pie I ever tasted," Jasper admitted. "It's better than hen's eggs."
"Don't you even know an omelet when you see one, Jasper?"
Augusta said. He was miffed to see the new cook become a hero in 5 minutes, whereas he had cooked excellent biscuits for years and drawn little praise.
"I could have scrambled one up if I'd known you boys had a taste for such things."
"Tonight I intend to fry some grasshoppers," Pocampo remarked. He was watching the two blue pigs. They, in their turn, were watching him. They had come out from under the wagon in order to eat the eggshells.
"If you're thinking of them pigs, don't bother," Augusta said. "If they want grasshoppers, let them catch their own. They're quick as rabbits."
"No, I am going to fry some for Newt," Pocampo said. "He claims he has never eaten a good fried grasshopper dipped in molasses. It makes a good dessert if you fry them crisp."
The crew burst out laughing at the thought of eating grasshoppers. Pocampo chuckled, too. He had already dismantled his little grill and was scouring the frying pan with a handful of weeds. Call felt relieved. It was easy to see Pocampo had a way with men. Everyone looked happy except Gus, who was in a sulk because he had been outcooked. Gus always liked to be the best at whatever there was to do.
"I like that bird's egg pie, but I draw the line at eating insects," Jasper said. "I wish I had some sweet potatoes. I'd show you girls how to make a pie."
"I hear you cook good biscuits," Pocampo said, smiling at him.
"That's right," Augusta said. "There's an art to biscuit making, and I learned it."
"My wife was good at it, too," Pocampo remarked. "I liked her biscuits. She never burned them on the bottom."
"Where's she live? Mexico?" Augustus asked,
curious as to where the short man had come from.
"No, she lives in hell, where I sent her," Pocampo said quietly, startling everyone within hearing. "Her behavior was terrible, but she made good biscuits."
There was a moment of silence, the men trying to decide if they were supposed to believe what they had just heard.
"Well, if that's where she is, I expect we'll all get to eat her biscuits one of these days," Augusta said.
Even he was a little startled. He had known men who had killed their wives, but none so cool about admitting it as Pocampo.
"That's why I hope to go to heaven," Pocampo said. "I don't want nothing more to do with that woman."
"This here ain't Montana," Call said. "Let's start the cattle."
That night, true to his word, Pocampo fried some grasshoppers. Before he got around to it, he fed the crew a normal meal of beefsteak and beans, and even conjured up a stew whose ingredients were mysterious, but which all agreed was excellent. Alan O'Brien thought it was better than excellent. It changed his whole outlook on life. He pressed Pocampo to tell him what was in it.
"You saw me gathering it," Pocampo said. "You should have watched better."
True to his principles, he had refused to ride the donkey or climb up on the wagon seat beside Lippy.
"I better walk," he said. "I might miss something."
"Might miss getting snake bit," Lippy said.
Since the incident on the Nueces, he had developed such a terror of snakes that he slept in the wagon and even stood on the wagon seat to urinate. Pocampo had walked all day, 100 yards or so west of the herd, trailing 2 sacks he had tucked in his belt. Now and then he would put something in one of them, but nobody saw what unless it was the pigs, who trailed the old man closely. All that could be said was that his stew was wonderfully flavorsome. Dietz ate so many helpings that he grew embarrassed about his appetite. It was Dietz who first got up his nerve to sample the fried grasshoppers. Since the new cook had the crew in such a good mood, Call allowed him to use a little of the molasses they were saving for special occasions. Just having someone who could cook decently was a special occasion, though, like the men, he put no stock in eating grasshoppers. But Pocampo had caught a big sackful.
and when his grease was hot, he sprinkled them into it 5 or 6 at a time. When he judged they were done, he used the tip of a big knife to flick them out onto a piece of cheesecloth. Soon he had 40 or 50 fried, and no one rushing to eat them. "Eat them," he said. "They're better than potatoes."
"Maybe, but they don't look like potatoes," Alan O'Brien said. "They look like bugs."
"Dish your top hand. You ought to take the first helping," Augusta said. "None of us would want to cut you out of your turn."
"You're welcome to my dang turn," Dish said. "I pass on eating bugs."
"What's holding you back, Gus?" Needle Nelson asked.
"Wisdom," Augusta said.
Finally, Dietz walked over and picked up one of the grasshoppers. He was inclined to trust a man who could cook such flavorsome stew. He grinned, but he didn't eat it right away.
"Put a little molasses on it," Pocampo urged. Dietz dipped the grasshopper in a little dish of molasses.
"I don't guess it'll kill him, but I bet it makes him vomit," Lippy said, watching the proceedings from the safety of the wagon seat.
"I wish you'd fry up some of these mosquitoes," Augusta said. "I doubt they'd make good eating, but at least we'd be rid of them."
Then Dietz ate the grasshopper. He crunched it, chewed, and then reached for another, grinning his big grin.
"Tastes just like candy," he said.
After he had eaten 3 or 4, he offered one to Newt, who covered it liberally with molasses. To his surprise, it tasted fine, though mostly what tasted was the molasses. The grasshopper itself just tasted crunchy, like the tailbones of a catfish. Newt ate another of his own accord, and Dietz ate 4 or 5 more. Then Dietz persuaded P.I. to try one, and P.I. ate 2 or 3. To everyone's surprise, Call strolled over and ate a couple. In fact, he had a sweet tooth and couldn't resist the molasses. Dish decided he had to eat one to keep up his reputation. Then the Rainy boys each ate a couple to imitate Newt. Pete Spittle walked over and ate 2, and then Soupy, Needle, and Bert each tried one. The remaining grasshoppers went quick, and before Jasper could make up his mind to try one, they were all gone.
"Dern, you're all a bunch of greedy pigs," he said, wishing someone had thought to save him at least one.
"But now I've seen everything," Augustus said. "Cowboys eating bugs."
His pride had not allowed him to sample them. It would only mean another triumph for Pocampo.
"Did I tell you worms make good butter?" Pocampo said.
"Anybody who tries to butter my biscuit with a worm had better have a long stride," Soupy Jones remarked. "This outfit is getting crazier all the time."
While the crew was standing around discussing the merits of grasshoppers, they had heard a galloping horse approaching camp.
"I hope it's the mail," Augustus said.
"It's Mr. Jake," Dietz said, long before the horse came in sight. Jake Spoon rode right up to the campfire and jumped off his horse, which was lathered with sweat. He looked around wildly, as if expecting to see someone.
"Ain't Lori here?" he asked.
"No,"
Augustus said, feeling sick suddenly. The night's stampede had caused him to forget Lorena completely. He had even forgotten that Jake had been out of pocket. He had drowsed all day, relieved that Newt was safe, and supposing that Lori had been fine or Newt wouldn't have left her.
"Gus, you better not be hiding her," Jake said in a shaky voice. He had whiskey on his breath.
"We're not hiding her," Call said quietly. "She ain't been here." Newt was about to go on night guard. He was just preparing a cinch that had begun to fray. At the sight of Jake, he felt a deep apprehension. All day he had believed that he had gotten away with his stupidity in leaving his horse. Now a new and worse fear struck him. Something had happened to the woman he had been sent to guard.
"Well, by God, she's gone, and I'd like to know where she went," Jake said. "Maybe she's moved camp," Augusta said, not wanting to face what he knew. "Or maybe you missed it. You look like you've had a few."
"I've had a whole bottle," Jake said, "but I ain't drunk. And even if I was, I could find my own darn camp. Anyway, the camping stuff is there.
Just Laura and the two horses that are gone. Call sighed. What about tracks? He asked. Jake looked disgusted. I didn't look for no tracks, he said. I figured she'd come over here and married Gus. They're such sweethearts, they have to have breakfast together every morning. Anyhow, where else would she go? She ain't got a map. Jake looked tired and shaky. He also looked worried. Where in tarnation could she go? He asked the crowd at large. I guess I can find her tomorrow. She can't be far off. Augusta's saddle lay a few feet away. He had been meaning to spread a tarp by it and use the saddle for a pillow. Instead, he picked it up, went over, and untied his rope. Without another word, he headed for the remuda. Where's he going? Jake asked. I can't figure him out. The sight of Jake, half drunk and useless, filled Call with disgust. Incompetence invariably made trouble for people other than themselves. Jake had refused to take part in the work, had brought this whore along, and then let her get stolen. She was there last night, Newt said, very worried. Mr. Gus sent me to watch. I watched till the cattle got to running. Augustus came back, leading a big sorrel. He called Jerry. The horse had an erratic disposition, but was noted for his speed and wind. You ought to wait and look at the tracks, Call said. You don't know what happened. She could have ridden into town. Jake might have missed her. No, Blue Duck stole her, Augustus said. It's my fault for not shooting the son of a bitch while he was drinking. I didn't know who he was at the time, but I should have shot him on suspicion. Then I plumb forgot about it all day. I'm getting too foolish to live. Blue Duck was here, Jake said, looking sick. Yeah, Augustus said, saddling the sorrel. I didn't worry much, because Dietz tracked him way south. But I guess he fooled us both. Well, there was talk of him over at Fort Worth, Jake said. He runs a big gang of murderers. They lay by the trails and murder travelers for whatever they got on them. Why didn't you just bring her to camp if you knew he was around? I should have for sure, Augustus said. But she didn't want to come. She had faith in you for some reason. Well, this is aggravating, Jake said. She wouldn't come to town either. She would have been safe in town, but she wouldn't come. What's your plan, Gus? He asked when he saw that Augustus was almost ready to leave. My plan is to get Laura back, Augustus said. I hope you'll catch the man before he gets home, Call said. Otherwise, you'll be up against the gang. Augustus shrugged. It's just one gang, he said. I'm going with you, Dish Boget said, surprising everyone. I didn't ask for volunteers, and I don't want any, Augustus said. It's none of your say anyway, you pup, Jake said hotly. I ain't no pup, and you're a gambling lowlife who let her get stolen, Dish said coolly. He and Jake faced off, both tense as wires, but Augustus mounted and rode his horse in between them. Now, girls, he said, let's not get to gunfighting. I'm going, and you two are staying here. It's a free country, Dish said, looking up at Augustus angrily. Not for you, it ain't, Augustus said. You got to stay here and keep this cow herd pointed for the North Star. That's right, Call said quickly. Losing Gus was all right. He seldom worked anyway, but Dish was their best hand. He had already turned two stampedes, something no one else in the outfit had the skill to manage. Dish didn't like it, but faced with the captain's orders, there was not much he could do about it. The thought of Lorena in the hands of an outlaw made him feel sick, and his rage at Jake Spoon for exposing her to such danger was terrible. He turned and walked away. Are we leaving tonight? Jake asked. My horse is rode down. You ain't leaving at all, Jake, Augustus said. At least not with me. I'm likely to have to travel hard, and I won't have time for conversation. Jake flared up again. By God, I'll go if I please, he said. She's my woman. Augustus ignored him. I hate to leave just when you're breaking in a new cook, he said to Carl. I guess by the time I get back, you'll all be nibbling on spiders and centipedes.
Dietz came over, looking worried. You best watch close, he said. He gave me the slip. Might give you the slip.
Oh, you probably had your mind on grasshoppers or something, Dietz, Augusta said.
You got enough shells? Carl asked.
I don't know. I ain't counted the gang yet, Augusta said. If I run out, I can always throw rocks at 'em.
With that and a nod, he rode off. Carl felt a little confused. Though the woman was no responsibility of his, he felt like he should be going, too. Here he was, stuck with a bunch of cattle, while Gus was riding off to do the work they ought to have done long ago. It didn't feel right. Meanwhile, Jake was working himself into a fury over Gus's behavior. I should have shot him, he said. By God, what does he mean, leaving me? I brought the woman. I guess I got a right to go fetch her back. You should have stuck closer, Carl remarked.
I meant to, Jake said guiltily. I only meant to stay in Austin one night. Then I got some good hands, and I thought I might make it two. She could have come with me, but she wouldn't. Loan me a horse, why don't you? I don't want Gus to get too much of a start.
He said he didn't want you, Carl said. You know him. If he don't want you, he won't take you. He wouldn't let us alone, Jake said, as if talking to himself. He was always coming for breakfast. Then his eyes fell on Newt, who was feeling guilty enough. You was sent to watch her, Jake said. I'd say you did a hell of a poor job. Newt didn't reply. It was true, he had. And it had made him feel worse that Jake was the one to say it. He mounted his night horse and rode quickly out of camp. He knew he was going to cry and didn't want any of the boys to see him. Soon he did cry. So much that the tears dripped off his face and wet the cantle of his saddle. Back in camp, Jake was still stomping around in a fury. That boy ain't worth his wages, he said. I should have given him a lick or two. Carl didn't like his tone. You sit down, he said. He don't need a lick. He came back to help with a stampede, which is what he was supposed to do. Probably Blue Duck started the cattle running some way and then went and got the woman. It ain't the boy's fault. Then Jake spotted Pocampo, who was sitting propped against a wagon wheel, his serape wrapped around him. Who's this? Another bandit? Jake asked.
No, just a cook, Pocampo said.
Well, you look like a bandit to me, Jake said. Maybe that goddamn Indian sent you to poison us all. Jake, you sit down or get out, Carl said. I won't hear this wild talk. By God, I'll get out, Jake said. Loan me a horse.
No, sir, Carl said. We need all we got. You can buy one in Austin. Jake looked like he might collapse from nervousness and anger. All the boys who weren't on the night guard watched him silently. The men's disrespect showed in their faces, but Jake was too disturbed to notice.
By God, you and Gus are fine ones, Jake said. I never thought to be treated this way. He climbed on his tired horse and rode out of camp, mumbling to himself.
Jake must have got his nerve stretched, P.I. said mildly.
You won't get far on that horse, Dietz said.
He don't need to get far, Carl said. I imagine he'll just sleep off the whiskey and be back in the morning.
You don't want me to go with Mr. Gus? Dietz asked. It was clear he was worried. Carl considered it. Dietz was a fine tracker, not to mention a cool hand. He could be of some help to Gus, but the girl was none of his affair, and they needed Dietz's scouting skills. Water might get scarcer and harder to find once they struck the plains.
We don't want to lose Mr. Gus, Dietz said.
Why, I doubt anything would happen to Gus, P.I. said, surprised that anyone would think something might. Gus had always been there, the loudest person around. P.I. tried to imagine what might happen to him, but came up with nothing. His brain made no picture of Gus in trouble. Call agreed with him. Augustus had always proved to be a good deal more capable than most outlaws, even famous ones. No, you stay with us, Dietz, Call said. Gus likes the notion of whipping out whole gang outlaws all by himself. Dietz let be, but he didn't feel easy. The fact that he had lost the track worried him. It meant the Indian was better than him. He might be better than Mr. Gus, too. The captain always said it was better to have two men, one to look in front and one to look behind. Mr. Gus would not have anyone to look behind. Dietz worried all the next day. Augustus did not come back, and no more was seen of Jake Spoon.
Chapter 49
Lorena didn't see the man come. She wasn't asleep or even thinking about it. What she was thinking was that it was about time for Jake to show up. Much as he liked card playing, he liked his carrot better. He would be back before long. Then, without her hearing a step or feeling any danger, Blue Duck was standing in front of her, the rifle still held in his big hand like a toy. She saw his legs and the rifle when she looked up, but a cloud had passed over the moon and she couldn't see his face, not at first. A cold fear struck her. She knew that she had been wrong not to go to the cow camp. She had even sent the boy away. She should have gone. But she had a silly notion that Jake would show up and scare the bandit off if he came back. "Let's get," Blue Duck said. He had already caught her horse without her hearing. Lorena felt so scared that she was afraid she couldn't walk. She didn't want to look at the man. She might start running and then he would kill her. He had the worst voice she had ever heard. It was low, like the lowing of that bull she kept hearing at night. But there was death in it, too. She looked down for a moment at the bedding. She had been combing her hair, and her little box with her comb in it was there. But the man pushed her toward the horse. "No thanks. We'll travel light," he said. She managed to mount, but her legs were shaking. She felt his hand on her ankle. He took a rawhide string and tied her ankle to her stirrup. Then he went around and tied the other ankle. "I guess that'll hold you," he said. He caught the pack horse. Then they were moving, her horses snubbed to his by a short rope. To the west, where the cow camp was, she heard shouts and the drumming sound of the cattle running. Blue Duck rode right toward the sound. In a minute, they were in the running cattle. Lorena was so frightened she kept her eyes closed, but she could feel the heat of the animals' bodies. When they were through the cattle, she looked, hoping to see Gus or one of the cowboys, anyone who might help her, but she saw no one. When the sound of the stampede died, Lorena let go all hope. She had been stolen by a man Gus said was bad. The man put the horses into a lope, and it seemed to Lorena that they were going to lope forever. Blue Duck didn't look back and didn't speak. At first, she was only conscious of how scared she was, though she felt flickers of anger at Jake for letting it happen. She knew it was as much her fault as Jake's, but she soon stopped caring whose fault it was. She knew she was as good as dead and would never get to see San Francisco, the one thing she had always looked forward to. Soon, even that loss and the prospect of death ceased to mean much. She grew so tired. She had never ridden so hard. Before morning, all she could think of was stopping, although for all she knew, when they did stop, something bad would happen. But in time, it came to seem to be worth it just to stop. Yet when they did stop in the faint dawn, it was only for 5 minutes. They had crossed many creeks during the night. Her legs had been wet several times. In a little creek scarcely 5 feet wide, he decided to let the horses water. He untied Lorena's ankles and nodded for her to get down. She did and almost fell. Her limbs were so weak and numb. It was dark in the little creek bed, but light on the ridge above it. As she stood by her horse, holding on to the stirrup until some feeling came back into her legs, Blue Duck opened his trousers and made water while the horses drank.
"Get to it if you plan to," he said, hardly looking at her. Lorena couldn't. She was too scared, and it didn't occur to her to drink, an omission she would soon regret. Blue Duck drank and then motioned for her to mount again. He quickly retied her ankles. They were moving again as dawn came. At first, the light made her hopeful. Jake or somebody might be riding after them. They might pass a town or a farm. Somebody might see that she was being stolen. But the country they rode through was completely empty. It was a country of rocky hills and ridges and a hot, cloudless sky. A blankness came to her, replacing her foolish hope. Blue Duck never looked back. He seemed to be taking the horses through the roughest country he could find, but he never slackened his pace. As the day grew hotter, she became thirsty, so thirsty that it was painful to remember that she had stood near a creek and hadn't drunk. She could remember the sound the creek made as it ran over the rocks. At moments, it haunted her. Most of the time, she was too tired to remember anything. It seemed to her the horses would die if they just rode all day. They rode at a steady trot. In time, she regretted, too, that she had not relieved herself. She had been too scared. Hours passed, and they crossed creek after creek, but the man didn't stop again. He just kept riding. The need to relieve herself became an agony. It was mixed with thirst and fatigue until she didn't know which was worse. Then she realized that her pants were wet and her thighs were stinging. She had gone while she was dozing. Soon her thighs felt scalded from the urine and the constant rubbing of the saddle. The pain was minor compared to her thirst. During the afternoon, with the sun beating down so hot that her skirt was wet from sweat, as if she had swum a river in it, she thought that she was going to break down, that she would have to beg the man for water. Her lips were cracked, and the sweat of her face ran into the cracks and stung her, but she looked at it. At least it was wet, and even a second wetness on her tongue felt good. She had never been so thirsty in her life, and had not imagined it could be such a pain. The most terrible part was when they crossed water, for the creeks were numerous. She would look down at the water as they crossed, and she wanted to beg. She leaned over at one of the deeper creeks, trying to get a little water in her hand, but she couldn't reach it, though it splashed beneath the horse's belly. She cried then, tears mingling with sweat. Her head throbbed from the beating sunlight, and she began to lose hold on life for minutes at a time. She felt she might cross over. What a joke it would be on the man if, when he got her wherever he was taking her, she was dead. He wouldn't get much from her dead. But she didn't die. She just got thirstier and thirstier. Her tongue began to bother her. It seemed to fill her mouth, and when she licked at the drops of sweat, it felt as large as her hand. Then, as she was dreaming of water, she opened her eyes to find that they were stopped by a sizable stream. Blue Duck was untying her ankles. "I'd say you wet your pants," he said. Lorena didn't care what he said. Her legs wouldn't work, but she wanted the water so bad she crawled to it, getting her pants muddy and her arms. She couldn't drink fast enough. In gulping the water, she got some up her nose. While she was drinking, Blue Duck waded in beside her and pulled her up by her hair. "Don't drink so fast," he said. "You'll founder." Then he pushed her head under and held it there. Lorena thought he meant to drown her and tried to grab his legs to pull herself out, but evidently he just wanted to give her a bath, because he soon let go and walked back to the horses. Lorena sat in the water, her clothes soaked, not caring. She drank until she couldn't drink any more. Blue Duck had unsaddled the horses, and they were standing in the river drinking. When she waded out of the river, Blue Duck was sitting under a tree, chewing on a piece of dried meat. He fished in his saddlebag and gave her a piece. Lorena didn't feel hungry, but then she remembered she had not felt thirsty that morning either. She took the piece of jerky. "We'll rest a spell until it's dark," he said. She looked at the sun, which was not high. It wouldn't be much of a rest. She nibbled at the meat, which was so hard her teeth could barely dent it. She went and sat in the shade of a small tree growing by the creek.
Blue Duck hobbled the horses and then came and looked down at her.
"I got a treatment for a woman that tried to run away," he said casually. "I cut a little hole in their stomachs and pull out a gut and wrap it around a limb. Then I drag them 30 or 40 feet and tie them down. That way they can watch the coyotes come and eat their guts."
He went back and lay down under a tree, adjusted his saddlebags for a pillow, and was soon asleep. Lorena was too tired for his threat to scare her much. She wasn't going to run away and give him a reason to cut a hole in her stomach. She did think that she was going to die, though. She felt death had her, in the form of a Comanchero. She wouldn't live to be cut or be gnawed by coyotes. She would die if he touched her, she felt. She was too tired to care much. The one thing that crossed her mind was that she had been determined to go riding off with Jake, who had not even looked after her 3 weeks. Jake was probably still in Austin playing cards. She didn't particularly blame him. Playing cards beat most things you could do. She dozed for what seemed like a minute and woke to find Blue Duck shaking her. It was dusk, the sun just down.
"Let's get," he said. "We don't want to miss the cool of the evening."
Once again, they rode all night. Lorena slept in the saddle and would have fallen off if she hadn't been tied to the stirrups. At dawn, he let her down again by another creek, and this time she did as he did, peed and drank. They rode all day again through empty country, never seeing a horseman, a town, or even an animal. The only thing she noticed was that there were fewer trees. She grew so tired of riding that she would have been glad to die, if only because it meant being stopped. She wanted sleep more than she had ever wanted anything. The sun blazed all day, and when she dozed, sweat stood on her eyelids and wet her face when she awoke. Blue Duck took so little interest in her that she couldn't understand why he had stolen her. He scarcely looked back all day. He untied her when they stopped, tied her again when they mounted. Once drinking at a creek that was barely a trickle, the hand she was bracing herself with slipped and she got mud on her nose. The sight seemed to amuse him slightly.
"Monkey John will like that yellow hair," he said. "He'll about have to marry you when he sees that."
Later, as he was tying her back on her horse, he mentioned her hair again.
"It's too bad the tribes played out," he said. "A few years back, all I would have had to do was scalp you. I could have got a bunch for a scalp like yours."
He reached up and idly fingered her hair.
"I hope that goddamn old ranger hurries along," he said. "I owe him a few."
"Gus," she said. "Gus won't come. I ain't his."
"He's coming," Blue Duck said. "I don't know if it's for you or for me, but he's coming. I ought to gut you and leave you here and let him bury whatever the buzzards and the varmints don't eat."
Lorena didn't look at him, for fear that if she looked, he'd do it.
"Only I told the boys I'd bring them a woman," he said. "I doubt they thought I'd find the likes of you. They'll probably give me most of their money and all of their hides when they see you."
That day her mare played out. She had been stumbling more and more as she tired. In the heat of the afternoon, she stopped and stood with her head down.
"I guess whoever picked this one was just planning to ride to church," Blue Duck said. He untied Lorena and put her on the pack horse. They rode off and left the mare.
The pack horse lasted only a day, and when he stopped, Blue Duck made her get up behind him on the big sorrel. If it bothered the horse to carry two riders, he didn't show it. Lorena held to the saddle strings and tried not to touch Blue Duck, although he paid her no mind. Riding at his back, she noticed something that she had not seen before, a white necklace of some kind. It was a bone necklace, and after looking at it for a time, she realized it was made of fingers, human fingers. That evening, when they stopped to rest, Blue Duck saw her glance at the necklace.
He grinned in a way that made her think of death. "Easiest way to get rings off," he said. "Just take the fingers. It's no harder than breaking off a little stick, if you know how." That night, he tied her hand and foot and rode off. Lorena didn't speak, didn't question him. Maybe he was leaving her for the buzzards. But she felt she would rather die than say something that might anger him. She didn't try to get untied, either, for fear that he was watching, waiting for her to make some attempt to escape. She slept, and she awoke as he was cutting her bonds. Another horse was standing there. "It ain't much of a horse, but it's only got to last about a day," he said. There was no saddle. He had not bothered to take the saddle off the dying pack horse. He passed a cord under the horse's belly and tied her ankles. She thought the riding hard even when she had a saddle, but quickly realized how easy that had been. She slipped from side to side and had to cling to the horse's mane to stay on. Blue Duck rode as before, seldom looking back. It was night, and she was tired, but there was no dozing. Despite her grip on the mane, she almost slid off several times. With her feet tied, if she fell, she could just roll under the horse's belly and be kicked to death. The horse was narrow-backed and not very smooth-gaited. She could find no way to sit that didn't jar her, and long before morning she thought if they didn't stop, she would be cut in two. But she wasn't. Though her hands were raw from gripping the horsehair so tightly, minute by minute, for hours, it seemed to her that she couldn't go on, that she might as well give up and slide under the animal's belly. There was no reason to stay alive anyway. Blue Duck had her. When he untied her at a creek, she stumbled into it to drink, no longer caring if she got wet or muddy. Again, he gave her only a piece of hard-dried meat. She barely had the strength to get back on the horse. She had to claw her way up using the mane. Blue Duck didn't help her and tied her ankles anyway, though it was obvious that she was too weak to run away. She felt a flash of anger. Why did he keep tying her when she could barely walk? The country had begun to flatten out. The grass was higher than any she had seen. When she looked up and flung the sweat out of her eyes, it seemed she could see a farther distance than she had ever seen before. Waves of heat shimmered over the grass. Once she looked up and thought she saw a giant tree far ahead, but when she looked again, it was gone. Blue Duck rode on through the high grass, never slowing, seldom looking back. She felt hatred growing, pushing through her fear. If she fell, he probably wouldn't even stop. He only wanted her for his men. He didn't care how much she was hurt or how tired she was. He hadn't cared to keep her saddle or even her saddle blanket, though the blanket would have kept the horse's hard back from bruising her so. She felt like she had felt when she had tried to shoot Tinkersley. If she ever got a chance, she would kill the man, in revenge for all the painful hours she had spent watching his indifferent back. Well before sundown, they came to a broad riverbed with just a little thin ribbon of brown water visible across an expanse of reddish sand. "Keep in my tracks," Blue Duck said. "If you don't, you're apt to bog." Just as he was about to put his horse into the sand, he held up. Across the river, Lorena saw four riders watching them. "It's Ermoki and three of his boys," Blue Duck said. "I guess they've been off scalping." Lorena felt a chill just looking at the riders. Jake had said most of the Indians still running loose were renegades. He made light of them. He had dealt with renegades before, he said, and could do it again, except that he was still in Austin playing cards, and there were the renegades. She wanted to turn her horse and flee, hopeless as it was. But while she sat in a cold sweat of fear, Blue Duck turned and caught her bridle, wrapping her reins around his saddle horn. They went cautiously across the sand, Blue Duck occasionally backtracking a few yards to find a route he liked better. Lorena kept her eyes down. She didn't want to look at the men waiting on the other side. Twice, despite all Blue Duck's caution, it seemed they had gone wrong. His horse started to bog, and then hers. But both times, by heavy spurring, Blue Duck got the big sorrel to lunge free, pulling her horse free. Once, in one of the lunges, she was thrown far up on the horse's neck, but finally they found a solid crossing and trotted through a few yards of brown water. As they rode out of the river, the